Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 69 of the Nerd Cantina Show. And today's going to be a Cantina conversation, really coming from C2E2. It's a C2E2 exclusive interview that Steve did.
Yeah, I had a chance to sit down with Courtney James, who is the head of the esports program for DePaul University. So I wanted a chance to sit down with her and really go over how colleges are using esports to attract students, to give some outlet for them, to give opportunities to students to take advantage of. It was a very interesting conversation. I was really glad that she had the time to sit down and do this with me.
Yeah, so I listened to the interview, and yeah, there's some great conversations and topics that you guys go through, not specifically only to their esports program, just video gaming in general and kind of the education and careers in the gaming industry. So interesting to hear somebody who's at academia and seeing all these students with their aspirations and their hobbies and how she foresees this kind of playing out and growing from here.
So let's roll the interview and we'll give some thoughts on it after.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
All right, welcome. I'm here with Courtney James from DePaul University. Thanks for coming on the show. And she's involved with DePaul University's esports program. So I'll let her introduce herself and explain what she does.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Like you said, Courtney James, I serve as the director for student involvement in esports. So I'm the lead staff administrator for DePaul's program. And our program really has four major components: our gaming center, our competitive teams, our student organizations, and then community outreach, which is why we're here at C2E2 this weekend. So we're connecting with people, talking a little bit about our program, and just giving people the chance to know what we're doing at DePaul.
Okay. How long ago was the esports program at DePaul established?
Yeah. So formally, our program was established in January 2018. Prior to that, we had a couple student organizations that existed, DFRAG and a couple others, our League of Legends group. But we really consider the start date to be that January 2018, because that was when a formal group at the university that included some academic deans, vice presidents, and others came together to figure out what were we going to do from a university level to really support esports. So from there, we opened our gaming center in 2018, and in about the year and a half, and about a year and a half after that, we went from having three student organizations to 15 affiliated with esports and gaming. So we've just really seen this boom happen since that formal acknowledgement of when our program was
established. So when you say gaming center, where on the scale are we talking about? Are we talking the janitor's closet, or are we talking like the football program weight room kind of scale? Where do the gamers fall into this realm right now we speak?
I think in terms of a size, we're probably talking about the size of a film room.
Okay,
might be. So we're
competing with the AV guys right now.
At DePaul, it has a really phenomenal location. It's located on our concourse level. So the way that DePaul's downtown campus works, it's in our schools are in sky rises. So it's on the main concourse level. It's the first thing you see when you go down. It has full glass windows, painted walls to go with DePaul's colors. We've got 12 Alienware PCs, DX Racer chairs, 4 TVs set up with consoles for PlayStation and Switch. So if it's a janitor's closet, it's a really, really fancy one. But our students really enjoy it. We get a ton of traffic. Actually, in our first year, we had over 1,200 students who used the space. And we have about 14,000 undergraduates, so we're right under 10% of our population is physically using the center.
Now, is this something that people are walking through the concourse and when they see it, they're just kind of amazed because they didn't know it existed? Or is this something that people are kind of like expecting to be the norm on campus now? Like, do you find that esports is still kind of under the radar?
Well, I think a lot of the people that are walking through and seeing it for the first time had no idea that these are starting to exist on college campuses. In my opinion, so I started as a general higher education administrator, particularly in student activities. I think that esports is right now, and you know, in 2020, what campus recreation facilities were in the 1990s. So in the 1990s, we saw this huge boom in people investing in their campus recreation centers. So places were starting to have lazy rivers and really fancy locker rooms and all of these things, because they weren't necessarily the decision maker for college students when they were looking at their campuses, but it was something that highly influenced what they were or where they were going to decide to go. So to me, that's what esports is right now. It's not... For some places, I think particularly for like D3 schools that are offering scholarships, it might be the big hook. But for D1 schools, there's not a ton of, I think there's only a couple D1 schools that are currently offering scholarships, of which DePaul's a Division I school. It's a nice cherry on top that's helping people really put them over the edge and deciding to go to some places.
So when, as you described it, it seems like it started out as local clubs on campus and kind of morphed into an official branch of, does it fall under the athletic program?
Not officially. Not at all. But we do have one dotted line to an athletic connection. So our esports program is managed through my office, which is student involvement. So I oversee much of the co-curricular or outside of the classroom experience. So it falls in there. The reason I say that there's a dotted line is because we actually compete in the Big East, which is our traditional athletic conference, in two games, and Rocket League and League of Legends. So the schools that participate in the Big East, like Villanova, yeah, who wins the national basketball championship, they're...
Well, you guys have been having a good basketball year this year, too. You can toot the horn. It's okay. Yeah. It's okay.
So that's the one, I think, the one caveat to some sort of traditional athletic feel, okay, is really in our Big East engagement.
So with that going from clubs to more of an official aspect, how seriously is it taken now as far as like practice time and scheduling and things like that? I know I played D3 college football. Mm-hmm. I was amazed when I got into college how much film time I had to be in, how much of that schedule, of my daily schedule, was taken up by the football program. Where are we at when it comes to esports? Do we have like coaches that are really keeping these kids on that type of schedule?
Mm-hmm. So esports look more like club sports in a university than they do athletics.
Okay.
So what I mean by that is they do have practice schedules. They have standards that each team creates, and our teams are managed by our student organization. So they get to establish what their varsity level is, their JV level, and then their casual play as well. So they do have, each team does have different practice requirements and different engagement standards that way. But then some of them do also hire coaches. So like our Overwatch team currently has a coach. Our Rocket League team has a coach. Some of them aren't there yet, but I know they're all striving to get there.
Okay.
So yes, they do have that figure who helps them watch game film and see what's going on, but also talks to them about how are you doing in the classroom, to really make sure that they can thrive in the game.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. So I know with athletics, a lot of it's tied to academic eligibility. Mm-hmm. So do all the esports have to meet a certain academic eligibility if they don't qualify for their GPA? Mm-hmm. That are they not allowed in the competitive realm? Or
some of their leagues do have a minimum GPA requirement. Right now, I think a lot of what esports is trying to figure out is where are the standards, because there isn't an overarching organization like the NCAA or the NAIA. So a lot of the requests that I get are about, are they enrolled or not? They just want to make sure that they're a student. I think, though, one of the things that's been most interesting, I think that there's this impression that students who game are spending all of their time gaming, so it's affecting them in the classroom negatively. And at DePaul, we found that that's not the case. The average GPA of a student not involved with esports is 3.2. The average GPA of our esports students is also 3.2.
Yeah, I feel that this is one of those things that they were going to do it anyways.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If you're an esport gamer, you were a gamer, mm-hmm, before you got into esports. So whether I'm gaming for the school or I'm just in my dorm room gaming with my, you know, roommate, I think that time is pretty much going to be relatively the same.
Oh yeah. Well, and so of our 1,000 plus gamers, Only about 10% of them actually compete on competitive teams. So the other 900 play in like intramural style or casual play, and it's much less formal. But the feedback that we get from our students, we've surveyed them a lot and done a lot of different data collection. What we're hearing is they're doing this because one of the benefits of it is the sense of community that it's building. We just ran a survey, that had two really interesting statistics come from it. So first, there was a nationwide survey run that suggested that 47% of students who are involved in esports and gaming aren't involved in anything else on campus. We ran that same survey at DePaul. We found that our number is actually 51%, so even higher than our national survey. So esports is all they're doing. So we followed it up with a question of which of these statements do you most closely relate to? And is it that you haven't found any friends through esports, that you've made some acquaintances, but you're still working on friendships, that you have one to two friends that you regularly interact with, or you have a large group of friends that you now consider yourself to be friends with? 42% of our students have told us that they have their normal, regular group of friends that they now interact with because of esports. 21% are telling us it's one to two. The remaining third of that of them are still either working on friendships or are haven't quite found them yet. But that's a really powerful story, you know. So outside of the gaming and the competitive side, esports is giving them this connection. And I think in a world that we clearly have issues, nationwide issues surrounding mental health and loneliness, esports is combating all of that. And I don't think that we in this industry yet speak to the power that that has, because people need to feel, they need to feel accepted and welcomed, and esports is really doing that.
We've done a few interviews with a couple of psychologists that focus in gaming. We've done a couple of news stories on our news segments regarding the same aspect that most people of my generation and above look at video gaming as antisocial. Mm-hmm. But really, if you look at the numbers and the way gaming is now currently, that it is actually a very socially interactive medium, that you're not just playing Mario smashing buttons in a room anymore. Mm-hmm. Most games are multimedia, totally interactive, whether the person's in the same room with you or across the world. Mm-hmm. We are still having that type of engagement. So the stigma around that lonely gamer in a dark room by himself wasting his life away really doesn't apply nowadays.
I couldn't agree more. In that same survey, one of the questions that we also asked was, who are you playing with? So when you physically come to the space, is it somebody remotely, or like what percentage of time? And 40% of the time, they're always playing with somebody who's in the gaming center, which I think that we'll only see that number increase as, you know, I think they find more relationships and more friends. But people are looking for that. You know, I think in a world that is so, you know, dominated by social media, and then even in the gaming realm with like Discord as their main means of communication, there's a lot of value in person meetings. And even what we see, because we have a very active Discord, we have like over 700 people who are part of our DePaul Discord. But when they meet together for the first time, they'll say, oh, are you this person? Like whatever mm-hmm. their tag is in Discord. But then they've then made a connection and they know so much about them before they even go. But people still, I mean, human beings still need that in-person interaction.
Well, and also after graduation, it's mm-hmm. it's a great way to keep in touch with these people that you build these relationships with. I know myself, I talk to my closest friends more on a headset than I see them at our kids' birthday parties or at work or anything else. Like most of the communication I do with my closest friends are through an Xbox headset, yeah. You know? So after they graduate, these are great ways to keep in contact with the friends you made on campus and keep those relationships strong mm-hmm. and whatnot. In the days of texting and things being very out of context and having no emotion to words, the fact that you can game and hear people's voices and inflection, I think, is really important in keeping kind of like a human aspect to our communication skills.
Yeah. Well, and Steve, I think you're getting into another really important skill set that gaming is developing, and it is that the online presence does have, and it's tied to careers later on. Even in my job, I mean, I work at a university, but because our campus is split between Lincoln Park and the Loop, so I do a lot of video calls, and I do a lot of phone calls, online communication. So I can foresee that there is going to, as we see this increase in Discord and everything else, we also have seen an increase in the workplace of in using these type of mediums for communication. So as gamers start to go off and get careers, they're going to be thriving in these systems that, quite frankly, are easier to use than some of the ones that they are using as gamers right now. So I think that they're going to become more effective communicators. They'll become better problem solvers digitally in whatever their chosen field is too.
Well, and to kind of pivot on that point, you know, college fraternities play a big role in future networking and things like that. Do you almost see the esports as kind of being not exactly a fraternity, but kind of that same fraternity mindset? You build these relationships, and then 5-10 years later, they could help you out in networking for jobs. And, you know, well, I was on the esports team at this school. Well, I was on the esports team. What game did you play? And then it ends up evolving into, you know, possibly getting you that job you wanted to land in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, and yes, I think that that is the case. I also think it'll be interesting because I oversee fraternity and sorority life at DePaul as well. I think that sometimes with fraternities and sororities, sometimes there's like they have this mindset or a perception of what a chapter that isn't theirs was like at their school. And then they build a picture of how that person is based on their individual interaction. So let's say like I went to a university and I was part of the Zeta chapter and I knew the Sigma chapter over here. And I meet another Sigma. I'm going to think that Sigma is like the Sigma that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in videos, and that might not necessarily be true, but in video games, there's, I think, a different level of understanding and acceptance and like,
focus on individualism.
Yeah, and it's focused on like a game and a concept. So I think that they'll, because at the baseline for all of those people, they're all gamers. So it'll be really curious. And I mean, there isn't a ton of overlap, particularly between fraternity and sorority life and FSL or in esports right now.
Yeah, there's a yeah. very small mesh yeah. where those two bubbles collide.
Yeah.
But.
So it'll be, well, and I think like, I mean, even if you look at the gamers that, who's gaming at DePaul? Our top two majors that are using our gaming center are our College of Digital Media, which isn't surprising. I mean, we have a nationally ranked game design program, and then our College of Business. So those are also majors that eventually have high paying jobs. So it's just a very different benefit as an alumni too.
So to keep it on like the career aspect that we were talking about, do you see other curriculum heads maybe looking towards esport to branch off this? Because, you know, video games have storyline writers, storyboard creators, so you need illustrators. It's not just coders that are involved in making video games. There's a lot of creative aspects. Do you see any of those branches of the colleges tending to maybe try to at least dive into that kind of aspect a little bit, maybe pick the brains of some gamers and focus on that? Or is it still just going to be poetry classes and read Beowulf on a weekend?
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the interesting thing that's popping up right now is people are starting to introduce esports majors, but I still don't quite know what that means. Like I'm going to be really interested to see what their curriculum looks like, because there's esports as a growing industry has all of these different components. Like you could be a journalism student who now focuses in esports. We have that at DePaul. We have a sport management professor who is having a focus on esports. So there will be, you know, just like we have sport management team, like people from the sport management industry who go off and help run teams or run different aspects of programs, that's going to also exist for esports. So if you look at like a traditional sports model, you can't major in sports.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't just say, I'm going to go to college and major in sports. Like, what does that mean? Like, which part of sport? And esports is growing in viewership, in engagement numbers, in in-person events, and all of these different things. So at DePaul, what we've seen is a lot of our traditional sport and engagement components are starting to integrate that in esports into their curriculum, so that people have the skill set to move forward. But I'll be really, I'll just be really curious what an esports degree looks like. Because like the skill set that it takes to be a game developer versus an event planner are dramatically different. Like, and you can't learn both of those effectively in one degree. But we're starting to see more and more of it pop up. And I think particularly as entities formalize jobs and positions, that's really critical about this, because I think right now what I see in a lot of the industry is, people are hanging their hat on like the fact that this is already a multi-billion-dollar industry, and they think that a position is eventually going to be made for them. But I think that companies and the industry has to start formalizing what these roles look like, to really bring validity.
That's what a lot of people don't realize, is that the video games financially dwarfs movies, mm-hmm. music, like every other genre that you can think of. You combine them and they still aren't bringing in the types of money that gaming is.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think a lot of people are starting to recognize what they're leaving on the table by not being involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
And with your interest and your curiosities, and your position at DePaul, what are you necessarily doing to advance those kind of narratives? Like, do you have anything you're trying to spearhead? Are you on the phone with like NCAA trying to say, you know, hey, look, guys, what are you waiting for? Mm-hmm. Why are you not involved in this aspect of college life?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think specifically for the NCAA, we're really fortunate to be a member of the Big East, because the Big East, I think, really, there are, I don't think that there's any other conferences that are doing really what we're doing in terms of bringing, we have 9 of our 10 schools, and we'll have 10 out of 11 next year, hopefully when UConn joins the Big East as well. And the commissioner for the Big East, Val Ackerman, is very involved in the NCAA. And Chris Schneider is our rep. They have been doing phenomenal things generally for the NCAA, but they've been introducing this conversation for us. So we don't all individually have to pick up the phone. They get to relay those messages and create a stronger voice for us. But I think outside of the NCAA engagement, one thing that college administrators can do generally, and people like me, is to encourage faculty to bring it into the curriculum. Because our students are asking for it. I mean, I sat on a careers in esports panel, and everybody has an idea. But I think that we've got to start training people for those careers and start to introduce it into whatever they might be teaching right now too.
Yeah, I'm sure if you asked 9 out of 10 illustrators, their answers are going to be, you know, I want a job at Marvel or Disney, mm-hmm. and they're not going to think that I should have a job at Bethesda, mm-hmm. or I should have a job at Blizzard, when those are just as viable in their field as a Disney or Marvel.
Yeah. I think that there's probably a lot of people that do have those dreams now too, particularly because the game developers are located in so many different parts of the country. I mean, they've got developers on the East and West Coast and I've had a chance to visit a couple of them, and there are hundreds of people that are all sitting there designing, developing, constantly working on these games. So I think particularly with the young people right now who are so intertwined in these, this is the thing that they turn to as well. So in addition to, you know, Disney, Marvel, all these DC that are popping up, I think that we're going to see more people who say, I want to work at Riot, or I want to work at Blizzard, because they're like, I had a chance to tour Blizzard's campus this past summer.
Really?
Yeah, and it's phenomenal. I mean, it's
jelly.
Yeah, it's a really, really cool space. So, and I mean, it would be, and all of these companies are designing, I think, experiential places of work too. So I think we're going to start to see more and more of that.
And so you'd mentioned that the Big East is kind of really expanding this. And what was the head, the guy's name that you just mentioned?
Val Ackerman's the commissioner.
So is he really seeing the value in this and kind of like spearheading being having the Big East kind of like be the first like official, you know, college division that is trying to really, you know, spearhead League of Legends mm-hmm. tournaments and have, you know, a kind of March Madness style of esports.
Yeah, she definitely does. She, we have a biannual esports meeting that Val will typically attend. Chris Schneider is our direct point of contact, but Val has made it a point to always come and learn about it, so that when she is in spaces, she can appropriately bring attention to it as well. So we've been really lucky and fortunate that they have been advocates for it, because they're, I think, introducing conversations around esports in spaces that weren't necessarily there before. And we've done now, we have as a conference, we have a relationship with ESL to run our League of Legends competition, and then EGF, who runs our Rocket League competition. And we had an in-person event in New York this past year for them. And we're hoping to add our third and fourth title. So I think that positive attention is just going to continue.
Okay. And just to be, you know, conscious of your time, to pull away from the college aspect, I know parents are very apprehensive to look at this as opportunities for their kids. You know, typical parents, they just want their kids to go into a safe career mm-hmm. that they know where they're going to be able to build a future on. And anybody from my generation or older, they're really kind of hesitant. It's kind of like when you tell your parents you want to be an actor, they're like, oh, geez, mm-hmm. like at least get a degree in something else before you move yeah. to Hollywood and waste your life. So what is it that you'd like to get across to the parents that are listening right now that this is a viable avenue for their kids to pursue?
Yeah. Well, there used to be this commercial that the NCAA would do where they'd feature athletes, and they would say something to the extent of like, because like 99% of us are going to go pro in something other than sports. And that's going to be the same for esports. There are professional positions that exist, and there's teams out there. There's, you know, again, teams that are bringing in billions every single year. So there will be some kids that are good enough to make those teams. And they might divert college, just the same way that we see some outstanding athletes. But there are all of these different components that, if you see your kid playing games right now, that's because somebody with a degree made that game for them. They designed the music. They made the characters. They came up with the marketing plan. They wrote the press release. They did all of these things that were related to getting the word out about that video game. So I think if somebody comes in, like if a kid comes in and says, I want to do this, that is a viable career now. You know, like we keep talking about it as a billion-dollar industry, but it truly is, and it's not going anywhere. Because at the end, the other thing about video games versus traditional sports, they're also a lot safer. You know, you might have like a sprained thumb instead of a concussion from a
football. This finger will never go straight again, thanks to football.
Right, yeah. And I have a colleague, Scott Novus, who presented. We have a Level Up Gaming Summit that we just hosted, and he shared that it's something like 7 out of 10 kids these days are playing video games or have been on a some sort of team environment for video games. That number's huge, you know? Yeah. So, like, I'm sure that the number of kids playing football is lower than
that. Well, me and my brother were both heavy into football. Like mm-hmm. I said, I played from 7 all the way to my freshman year of college, and CTE is something that me and him have both talked about that we are severely worried about. Mm-hmm. I was knocked out a few times in games, and I went to the sideline. I was back on the field 2 plays later, mm-hmm. you know? So, you know, to that camaraderie of team sports and what playing team sports builds, you can get that same camaraderie, learn those same lessons, and build those same social skills without putting your body through that kind of pain, and also learn skills that can transfer over into the real world mm-hmm. and build a career also. So, yeah, I do really think that parents really need to look into this. As far as scholarship availabilities, what are what are parents able to kind of like push their kids towards in that avenue? Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of, particularly for high school students, there's a couple of digital resources where high school kids can find out what's available for them. So NACEF is one, and the other one is Be Recruited. There's a couple more out that are out there. Those are the two that oftentimes get talked about the most, though. But the great part about these sites is somebody, a kid can go into them and they can put in their statistics and all of their information that they have, but then they can also see what the curricular options are for an institution. So let's say, you know, they wanted to major in something more specific than like communication or business as a topic. Like, we'll roll with the game design example since we've been talking about that a little bit. Let's say they wanted to look at game design. They could then go into these sites and say, I'm interested in this, and they can see, you know, maybe AAA University has a game design program, but there's only 20 students enrolled and not really the curriculum they're looking at. They can look at what other schools have it, what other schools offer it, and they can start to compare notes. They can reach out to administrators to say, I'm interested, what do you have available? You can see what teams exist, all of those different things. So it's a great first place to start.
No, that's great. I think that pretty much covers a lot of what I had questions for. Where can people look up, you know, especially our local Chicago fans, where can they go to look up the DePaul eSports program?
Yeah, well, our website is esports.depaul.edu, and you can get redirected to nearly any of our other things from that site. So our Discord, our social media, a phone number if you need it, all of that's right there.
All right, so you heard it, parents. Don't take the controller away from your kids. Don't worry about screen time as much as I know our parents are worried about it, and encourage your kids and to do what they love, but you know, make sure that it's a viable resource. So I appreciate your time for coming off the con floor for a little bit and having this discussion with us, and I wish you the best of luck in the future.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, so that wraps the interview, and I really like the fact that, you know, when it comes to esports, that we're giving a lot of different perspectives, right? We've given the professional gambler perspective, we've given the psychologist perspective with our, you know, Parents Guide to Video Games interview. And now we have like a college administrative kind of perspective on esports, which was, again, very eye-opening on the opportunities that are presented to youth with video game industry.
Yeah, she definitely gave some really good examples as far as what, you know, what these kids are coming from, even the kind of how diverse their backgrounds are as far as like what majors they're coming from was kind of interesting to me. I guess I expected, or my assumption would have been that, you know, they were all coming from like almost like computer science background, so they were all very tied into the gaming background here there at esports. But really, you know, she said I think most of them were coming from like the business majors, so definitely interesting to see that spread there.
Well, and it was interesting to hear how quickly it's growing too. You know, initially they built the lab and it started off as like a club or like an intramural kind of sports, and now it's taking on its form of being competitive. So you have like the amateur sports kind of level of participation along with the intramural sports and club aspect of it. The fact that the Big East is taking this on is a huge advancement. This is a story I would like to follow to see the progression of it, so we can bring it to our audience and let them know how fast this is. You know, we're both old as shit and got young kids, so, you know, I'm sure we have audience members that are old as shit with young kids, and you know, this is good information to give them when their kids are talking about what they want to do with their lives.
Yeah, I'm curious. I know you asked the questions about kind of the NCAA adoption or whether they're going to be qualified as a legitimate sport, and currently they're not. And man, I find it really hard for the current makeup of the NCAA to ever allow it to happen, because you think that the current rules and structure of NCAA is if these kids ended up being governed by NCAA, that means they can't have their own Twitch streams, right? They can't make money anymore. That makes them professionals. They can't.
Well, we're seeing that change in the NCAA now with basketball and football changing that landscape. Well, it's still in its inception, which is also esports is still in its inception. So maybe these two things progress hand in hand.
Yeah, I think it. I think that that's going to be a big challenge, though. Is, you know, in college football and basketball, well, they need to go play college football and basketball in order to get to the professional level. In esports, you can go compete in these high dollar tournaments at 15 years old if you're good enough. So there's no reason to necessarily be a part of an esports program other than potential scholarship money or whatever else. But the NCAA is going to take a lot of the fun out of it. They're going to take a lot of the money out of it for the individuals. And there's opportunities for them to make it without it.
More conforming to a different model than trying to shove esports into the athletic model. If the NCAA sees that they can make money off this, they're not going to leave money on the table. And if they will lose that opportunity by blocking Twitch streams and YouTube channels and things like that, then no one will join the esports teams and it'll never get off the ground. You know, they're going to need these big name streamers and things like that to join into the NCAA for it to even succeed. So as how amateur basketball, the money came later, the money wasn't there first. You know what I mean? It used to just be a college basketball team and it made a little bit of money, but it was never what it was. And then the money just kept growing and they just kept blocking the players from making it. We're kind of starting esports backwards. The money's already there. And now they need to figure out how to intertwine that into college athletics. So I think because this situation is reversed and it's not starting out as something that isn't monetary, it'll grow monetarily through the NCAA. I think because it's already established that the NCAA is going to, if they want this, they're going to really have to make concessions and figure it the fuck out.
It's definitely a different model that they would have to go to. Like I said, I can't see the current NCAA adopting it. But it is interesting to see kind of video game culture and video games really creeping into the college atmosphere, both in whether it's intramural type settings, but having these gaming rooms and gaming centers that that can bring students together. We also see, she talked a little bit about it, DePaul doesn't currently have degrees and majors in video gaming, but there are at places like UC Irvine here out by me has video game, a very big like video game design program, and you can actually major in several different studies that are all related specifically to video game storytelling, video game design, video game programming.
You know, this is going to, yeah, like I said, this is really going to be interesting to see where we go. I'm going to want to touch base on this subject, you know, annually, just to kind of see the progression. It's very interesting to me to watch something that, you know, we grew up with video games. Like if you were to tell my 8-year-old self that one day, you know, breaking bricks with my head and eating mushrooms was going to turn into a multi-billion-dollar industry that has college scholarships and all a plethora of job opportunities, I'd have told you you're fucking crazy. Like, you're fucking crazy, man.
Yeah.
You know, so to see this going, you know, me coming from the retro gaming generation, I just, it really is interesting to me.
Yeah, it was a great interview that you had there. It was awesome that you were able to get time to sit down and talk to her about the program over there at DePaul. And then for those who aren't in the Chicagoland area, I'm sure something similar exists in and around your area. If you do a quick Google search of esports programs at your local college, you'll probably be surprised to find one.
And if you can't find one and you are a college student on campus, this might be a good opportunity to bring these kinds of interviews and bring some of the hard data that other schools have now accumulated and pitch it to your administration. You know, these computer labs that she was describing are real appeal when it comes to college recruitment. You know what I mean? If you're weighing between three colleges that you want to go to that have kind of equal level degrees and equal programs, a gaming lab like this might be the deciding factor in what college campus you choose. You know, so use that information to pitch that to to your local college or the college that you're attending and try to get yourself a nice little dope lab.
Can't hurt.
I just think it's amazing. So kids nowadays, they really don't know how good they got it. You know, I mean, it's one thing to never have to use a corded controller. It's another thing to have your entire future be able to be wrapped in this awesome video game career and shit like that. Like these were never opportunities that were presented to people like us back in the day. You know, I was sitting 6 feet away from my fucking screen with a fucking corded controller to a Nintendo sitting on the fucking floor. Like, you people don't know how fucking good you got it.
All right. I think that's it. This is the first of several C2E2 interviews that we will roll out. And thanks for listening to episode 69 of this Cantina conversation here.
Yeah, we got more coming, so keep coming back, guys.
All right. And then as always, like, subscribe, rate, review. All are greatly appreciated.
Pound that shiz.
All right. Until next time. Talk to you next time, nerds.